This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And it's Geek Squawks. Happy New Year. My name is Jeff Sandhu. Together with Matt Amatit's Culture Pop, we are going to, basically this time around, it's a little bit different. Not because we're doing things differently for the year. It's just that we've got so much to talk about. It's like, a continuation of MSP just half an hour ago. Talking about how we've kind of like spent the last decade and, you know, what are some of the big changes that we've seen and things that maybe we never really realized that it's happened in the last 10 years. And then you look at it and go like, ooh, wow, it was actually very impactful. Because most of the things when you ask people, hey, you know, what do you think like happened in the last decade? They would pick out the pretty obvious stuff. Like they would say, oh, you know, it's pretty cool that, you know, you've got the Uber, the rise of Uber and Grab and Airbnb, everything's online and stuff. But we don't think about the consequences of having all of these kind of services online.
And our memories are really short because I was looking through one of the lists of most influential technologies of the last 10 years and Vine was on there. And exactly.
Vine.
You know, everyone went crazy over Vine for about a year and then it suddenly disappeared. But, you know, it was one of those things. It was massive and there were Vine influencers and brands were putting loads of money into Vine. And then it just kind of popped disappeared overnight. And, you know, that was put as one of the major tech trends. And I would have been hard-pressed to even remember that Vine existed.
Yeah, and one of your favorite writers or journalists on The Guardian, Douglas Rushkoff, because you've quoted him many times on MSP before.
I have. I think he must be as miserable as I am. Yeah,
he wrote a very MSP-ish piece, or, you know, it could be the other way around. But the piece really talked about how we spent the last decade letting our tech control or define who we are. But really, it's actually just out of control. And he talks about how, you know, when we come to remember this decade as the one where human beings finally realize we are up against something, it's just that we're not quite sure what it is. And most of us has come to understand that our digital technologies are not always bringing out the best of our natures. People actually woke up to the fact that our digital platforms are being coded by people who don't have our best interests at heart. And this is the decade, he says, finally, where the tech backlash began, but it's a little late. And he goes on and elaborates and expands about it. And I have to say, though, as dystopian as it may sound in the article, he's probably right. We can't seem to undo what we've set in the last decade.
No, and partly, you know, I mean, he quotes people like Shoshana Zuboff, whose book Surveillance Capitalism we've talked about on MSP before as well. But he also makes the good point that when people write books like that, because of what goes into writing them, they're actually writing it. By the time it's published, it's from a period of time that doesn't really exist anymore. The technology moves so fast that even if that book that comes out in 2018 is about the world of 2014 or 2015, it's not really relevant to the world that it comes out in. So, you know, it's like peering back into time to have a look at these things. So, yeah, it is interesting for us to get to this realization and decide that we do have to do more to bring the control back. Mm.
He also talks about different worlds, which, you know, in this decade is that, you know, our tech has grown from some devices and platforms we use to an entire environment in which we function. We don't just go online by turning on the computer and then dialing up through a modem. We actually live online 24/7. We create data as we move through our lives. It's accessible to everyone and everything. And our smartphones are not devices that sit in our pockets. They actually create new worlds with new rules about our availability, our intimacies, the appearance, and also our privacy. And if you think about it, that's very, very, very scarily true.
Well, it is scarily true. And it's one of these, it's kind of the flip side of always on internet.
Mm.
We assume that the internet is just there for us when we choose to put the phone on, flick the screen on and open Facebook or open the browser and or open whatever app. And we consider that to be going online. As you were saying, we don't think so much about the fact that that phone is always connected, that it's always sending us messages
yeah.
and notifications. So there really isn't any differentiation. You know, I think probably, yeah, that last night mm. I remember hearing my phone, which was on silent mode, vibrating on my table as a friend in another part of the world sent me a Happy New Year message. But I was aware of that even within my sleep. These devices are always on and we are never offline. We even use sleep trackers,
yeah.
digital sleep trackers connected to the internet to tell us how well we're sleeping.
Mm. You know, it's funny because I think last week I watched a video on Vox that explained about, you know, notifications. And notifications actually came out because it was the idea to stop you using your phone more often. Because if you didn't have a notification, you would pick up your phone and open up email, for example, and kept checking on it. So notifications came in as a tool for you to use your phone less, so you only get notified when it rings. The problem is that now you get notification for almost anything. Even if a friend is in a nearby location or attending an event that's happening next week, you get a notification about it.
Yeah, and I mean, how many of us sit there with our laptop or our tablet or whatever we're working on open in front of us
mm.
and the phone is lying there by the side and the phone is constantly glowing yeah. on with notifications and your eye is constantly being drawn. And it's this weird thing that you can just as easily get those same notifications for the most part on that computer, but your attention is still yeah. drawn down to that little mobile device. Mm.
And it's also, he goes on and talks about how, you know, your digital environment is very different from my digital environment
yeah.
and everyone else's digital environment. Because what happened to us in 2010s wasn't just that we were being surveilled, but all that data was being used to customize everything we saw and everything we did online. We were being shaped into who the data said we were. The net you see and the net I see are completely different. Your Google search results are different than mine. Your news feeds are different than mine. Your picture of the world is very different.
Absolutely. Again, adding to the mobile cop shows I spent most of Christmas watching, I was also watching a lot of Dragon's Den and Shark Tank clips. Mm-hmm. And the number of entrepreneurs who come in with a new product or a new service and they say, well, my service is ranked number one on the Google search results. But they forget it's only ranked number one on their own Google search results
yeah.
because they go to the site all of the time and they're within that environment. Anyone else searching for it probably wouldn't even find it on page 1612.
Yeah, billion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now, I highly suggest everyone to go on and read the article because he goes on and he talks about how the next decade will determine whether we human beings have what it takes to rise to the occasion of our own imposed obsolescence. We must stop looking at our screens and their memes for a sense of connection to something greater for ourselves. So, very, very interesting article. It's, if you like MS, Douglas Rushkoff is probably your favorite.
Yeah, so
writer.
Basically Jeff's saying, read this, it's better than Matt. So yeah. that's pretty much the lesson we've learned from this.
Yeah, and when we come back, we will stick with that dystopian theme, especially talking about phones, because I came across an article on Technology Review about how a lecturer asked his students to turn in their cell phones and write about living without them. There is one story that really, I guess, encapsulated how I feel about tech. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Best for money. BFM 89.9.
And we're back. It is Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandhu. Now, earlier on, we were talking about how, you know, we spent the last decade letting tech...
We were talking about how another tech journalist is better than me.
who wrote on the Guardian website, Douglas Rushkoff. Really interesting article.
See, he's still doing
compliments
it.
Compliments MSP's show.
Oh, yeah, just throw that one in.
Now, on technologyreview.com, Ron Sergley, he wrote on this very interesting article where he asked his students to turn in their cell phones and write about living without them, because a lot of his students failed a midterm test rather badly, and he had a hunch that maybe it's the, I guess, like how you mentioned, you know, you got your mobile phone just, you know, on the desk next to, in this case for the students, probably their textbooks, right?
I'll be honest, I've just turned the phone over because I kept being drawn to the screen, even talking about the distractions on it, so I've just had to turn the phone over to talk about the distractions of mobile phones.
So he had a hunch that maybe it's the cell phones and these laptops that are in class are partly responsible. So he kind of like asked them, what do you think had gone wrong? Interestingly, one young woman said that, you know, we just don't understand what the books say. We don't understand the words. So he thought, you know what, let's try this interesting experiment. He offered them extra credit if they would give him their phones for 9 days and write about living without them. 12 students picked up this offer. That's about a third of the class. And what they wrote was very, very, very interesting, because just after 2 weeks, the majority of them began to think that their cell phones were in fact limiting their relationships with other people, compromising their own lives, and somehow cutting them off from the real world. But in the early stages, especially one of them, and this one's something really resonated with me, because one of them said that, believe it or not, I had to walk up to a stranger and ask what time it was. It was honestly very hard because it took a lot of guts and confidence to ask someone, what is the time? And the person described the attitude that she was up against as, why do you need to ask me the time? Everyone has a cell phone. You must be weird or something. And that's just strange, because it goes on to say that these young people, direct and unmediated human contact was experienced as ill-mannered at best and strange at worst. One of the worst and most common things that people do nowadays is just pull up the cell phone when you don't want to have a face-to-face recognition. You go into this world. And I go like, wow, yeah, I don't remember the last time I asked someone for anything.
I mean, I do, but that's because I'm, you know, I guess I'm from a generation that pre-exists this kind of technology. So there was something, again, that came out over Christmas that men would rather be lost. It was one of these surveys that, you know, compared women and guys and whatever. But finding directions, men would rather spend hours driving around lost than stop and ask for directions. Now, I've never had a problem stopping and asking for directions, probably because I get lost an awful lot. So I just kind of short circuit it. But no, I've never had problems asking for help, but I can understand that as well, because, you know, I use my phone as social armor as well. If I go to events and I don't really know anyone, I will just go and sit in a corner with my phone out. Sometimes there might not even be an internet signal, especially if you're in like a ballroom of a hotel or whatever.
Then you're just clearing space in your phone, deleting photos.
Yeah, deleting photos. Obviously not deleting emails in my case, but yeah, you know, you do use it as that social armor. You use it to avoid making eye contact, to avoid having to talk to anyone, and to put yourself in those difficult social positions.
Yeah, I find it very strange, because I do it too, and I never realized just how impactful it has been, especially in the last 10 years, because at the start of 2010, it wasn't so strange to, you know, ask someone some opinion on something, or directions, or, you know, if you just need help on something, or just asking them what do they think about this. Nowadays, though, you know, you go to a bookstore, you would Google a review about it. You won't really go and ask the bookkeeper and go like, you know, what do you think about this book, and have that conversation. You just go online and then you see like, is this a bestseller? What have people spoke about it? You feel more comfortable talking about people online and reading about what they say, which may or may not be true, they may not be whoever they say they are, but somehow it has that connection though. I feel more connected being connected on, I feel more connected to the real world being connected in the digital world, if that makes any sense.
I mean, it does make sense, but I think maybe it is a mistake that people make to think that. And I do often try and break down that wall with people. And I will actually speak to strangers in public spaces. And generally, the reaction is quite a warm one. Because people aren't expecting it. They don't have those interactions anymore. So if you suddenly start talking to someone, and especially, you know, in lifts, people talk about all kinds of stuff. So I will actually start speaking to people in lifts, and they're a bit taken aback at first, but then they do just kind of open up and start chatting. So it is something that is easily rectified. But yeah, it just becomes a bad habit, I think.
So our message for this new decade as we stepped into 2020 is to chat more, put down the phone.
Absolutely. Talk more,
especially in the lift.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the message for this year. Talk to strangers in lifts.
That's a start, you know, because for some people, especially, I guess, you know, celebrities, they've taken this slightly different on a different route, because they've, in 2019, to become cool online is to be real, and the idea of being real is that you literally record everything that happens in your life without, like, you know, some kind of, you know, filters or Photoshop. You record who you truly are, and this kind of started through various different celebrities, but one of them was a YouTube personality, Emma Chamberlain, who's got like almost 8 million followers, and she, in sometime in 2019, she just said, like, do you know what, I'm going to be totally real with you guys. So she described in a recent profile while you know, she posts videos of herself crying, and she says, whenever I'm crying, I would document it, and I would take photos of myself. And I've seen many of these on Instagram now, where people are sharing things that are true. But I just find it strange that someone's crying, like you are crying, and then you remember to, oh, I got to take a selfie of me crying now and document this moment.
Like, yeah, I
find that very strange.
I find that very weird. Yeah. You know, why is that something you want to document?
Yeah.
It's like getting mugged in the street and then
wanting to document it.
And wanting to document it. It's like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know whether it's part of oversharing. I can understand this idea of being less curated, but at the same time, showing that emotional and vulnerable side also feels like a form of curation as well.
Yeah, yeah. Because you're trying to show that you are a real human being, because apparently, you know, and everything online is fake. But there are some celebrities where, you know, even though they try to be quote-unquote real online, it just doesn't resonate with, you know, real human beings. Take Kim Kardashian, for example, right? She is the one of those influencers that decided to get real, but she never really breaks out of character. In a video that was released in December, she talked about how dealing with preeclampsia while pregnant and the 5 surgeries that followed, and as painful and as genuine as her experience was, it's nearly impossible to ignore how practiced and staged everything was in the video. Apparently it was, you know, perfectly lit, it was symmetrical, her made up face offset by a brown teddy sweater and this, you know, beautiful like wallpaper background. And, you know, it's just so curated. But yet she's saying about, you know, I'm being real and explaining to you about the painful surgeries I had and all. But you go like, okay, looks like a very decent life still.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of the, I think middle of last year, I started following, along with millions of other people, the actress Busy Phillips. And I like her feed because it does come across as being real, but it comes across as real in a messy sense.
Oh, yeah.
She's, okay. You know, you can see the mess in the background. She doesn't always have her makeup done, or, you know, she doesn't look picture perfect after she's been on a long haul flight. Mm. You know, all of those kind of things. That's the kind of realness I think we want, rather than
aspirational realness.
Yeah, aspirational realness or emotional breakdowns just for the sake of views.
Mm. You will hear a lot more about this, though. This phenomenon, aspirational realness, is the idea that a curated life that's ever so messy in just the right photogenic ways is somehow authentic.
Yeah, well, if you want a slice of hopeless realism, you can follow my Instagram account.
Oh, yes. Please do. What do we have for Geek Tunes, Matt?
We have one of my favorite artists of the last few years, Sharon Van Etten, with No One's Easy to Love, just like me.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.